Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting shows from the golden age of radio. I'm your host, Mark Levonier, and coming up in this hour, crime. Later on, we'll hear the Crime Club, but right now, a very rare series and a rare episode from said show, it's Indictment. Though on the air from January of 1956 through January of 1959, only about 9 shows of this series still exist, and only 3 of them widely in circulation. This next broadcast considered to be in the rarer side of the show's survival, and you'll hear some quality loss and some what is called crosstalk, where it sounds like there might be another show going on in the distant background. Consider this next broadcast good listening, but also a contribution to the old-time radio community, as this show has rarely been heard. It's Indictment.
Indictment. The drama you're about to hear is from New York City and is based on stories of the criminal law with authentic procedure as detailed by Eliezer Lipsky, former Assistant District Attorney of New York. It is the Assistant District Attorney who directs criminal investigations, assembles facts and witnesses, builds the case to a just indictment.
And 10 is 40, 50, 60, less 1% is 60 cents, makes 59.40 after leaving the office. All right, next.
Mr. Bennett?
Cash Bennett in person at your service. What can I do for you, my dear lady?
Well, I have this check. I'd like to have cash.
Uh-huh. Right, that's what we're here for. Anybody recommend you to us, huh?
No, I just noticed your sign so many times.
Well, all right, let's see the check.
You see, it arrived in the mail this morning, and the banks are closed.
Sure, everybody could use a little cash in the pocket, no problem. Woo-hoo, $1,500.
Oh, is that too much?
Well, we like a little notification in advance beforehand when it's more than a grand.
I beg your pardon?
Over $1,000. Oh. But we can make an exception for a nice lady like you.
Thank you, sir.
Don't mention it. Let's see now. Pay to the order of what's that? Delva.
D-E-L-V-A. Delva Lee.
Yeah. Hey, I heard that name before, didn't I?
Perhaps you heard me sing. I was known as Del Valle. Well, that was a long, long time ago.
Sing?
Opera. A very long time ago.
Well, it could be I read the name, dear lady. Now this outfit makes out the check. Park Burnett. Yes, that I know, I heard.
Yes, they're famous auctioneers. I sold some of my things.
I get the picture, dear lady. You got any identification? Driver's license, social security?
Yes, Bennett, I'm 78. I don't drive, and as for social security, well, I'm afraid I don't have that either.
Well, anybody to vouch for you?
Well, it's the ad for the... For the sale of my things from the gallery.
Sale of autographs, manuscripts, music by, Puccini, DeBrussi, Dear lady, I believe you. But could you give me a name, a place?
Well, there's my landlady. I live at a brownstone, 77A.
All right. Now, the landlady's name.
Ivy Grace. And there's Mr. Tucker. Amos Tucker.
Hey, what is this with the names ringing bells with me all of a sudden? Amos Tucker. Now, where did I hear that?
Oh, Mr. Tucker used to be a very famous lawyer.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, must be a zillion years old. You know him?
Mr. Tucker lived in my boarding house. We're neighbors.
Well, that's good enough for me. All right, dear lady, you understand that there is a charge for a check cash.
Yes, I am. Well, I gathered that when you counted out that other man's
thing. 1% up to 100, that's $1, and 2% up to 500, so that's 8 on the next 400,
and
2.5 on the remainder of the 5 C's is, 25. Plus 8 is 33, plus 1 is 34.
$1,400 is 1,466.
How do you want it?
I only received $1,466. Is that what you're saying?
Well, dear lady, I ain't in business for my health.
Well, very well. I'd better take it medium bill.
Sure. Now, let me ask a personal question. What are you going to do with this money?
Live on it.
No. I mean, when you get home, where are you going to keep it? under the mattress?
Well, I really hadn't thought, but... Well, I'll be very frank with you, Mr. Bennett. I wouldn't have been so anxious to cash the check if a...
Landlady, grocer bills, I know. I'm still asking, where are you going to stash this money? You want to get robbed?
Well, no, but...
All right, dear lady, sit down. We're going to have a little talk.
And if there's anything you want to add to that, put it in an envelope and send it to me. Yes, that's Edward McCormick. Yes, you can telephone, certainly. And if I'm not here, give what you have to Detective Tom Russo. And I hope you get the call, Tom.
Now what?
Oh, everybody and his brother seems to think I'm the only assistant district attorney on the staff. All right, get it over with. Who's outside that just has to see Mr. McCormick?
Ed, you know Wally, the elevator man.
What's he done? Or is it his second cousin's sister-in-law's boyfriend?
Oh, it's an old lady who lives in his boarding house, sir. He's been shouting you to her, Ed. She's in some kind of money trouble.
Well, tell her to get herself a lawyer. I'm not a collection agency.
Well, Ed, she's 78 years old, and she's got a lawyer.
Mm-hmm. All right, what does she want with me?
The lawyer's 82 years old, Ed.
But please state, where does Wally live? The old folks' home? Well, what's a lawyer's age got to do with it anyhow?
He's in trouble. Listen to her story, will you?
Is it a criminal case? Is it a civil case? What's the problem?
You're the lawyer. Help them out.
All right. Send her in. What's her name?
Delva Lee.
Delva Lee?
Mm-hmm.
You sing at the Met under the name Del Valley?
That's right.
Why didn't you say so in the first place?
Boy, you in a lovely mood.
Now, Miss Lee, do I understand you to say you left the money with Cash Bennett over that weekend?
$1,200 of it, Mr. McCormick,
mm-hmm.
And I haven't seen a cent of it since.
But what was all that about investing it?
Well, when I came back for it, Mr. Bennett explained that keeping it with him was as good as keeping it in a bank.
I'll bet.
Mr. Russo, you think it if you know Mr. Bennett.
Miss Lee, Cash Bennett's the next racket man. We suspected him for a long time.
Suspected? Of what?
Of using his check-cashing agency as a front, a masquerade, Miss Lee, for helping criminals conceal income.
Never.
Well, you never should have. But let's get back to your story. What did he say he was doing with your money?
Why, he said it couldn't be safer in a bank. He said it was earning money for me just like interest, and better interest than a bank would give.
As you found out when you cashed your check.
Oh, yes, yes, indeed.
Mm-hmm. And you haven't seen a cent of it.
Mm-hmm, that's right. He keeps putting me off.
How long has this been?
6 months.
You have no bank book? No receipt, no proof of any kind?
Why, no.
Oh, me.
Mr. McCormick, you don't understand. It's not my money I'm after. I've come about Mr. Tucker.
That's Amos Tucker, Mr. McCormick, Miss Lee's lawyer.
Yes, yes. I put the matter into his hands, and he took steps.
What kind of steps?
He went to Mr. Bennett and spoke with him.
And?
He returned. Mr. Tucker returned with as white as a sheet. Tracy just quivered. He wouldn't say what happened, but I feel, well, I just know Mr. Bennett must have spoken sharply to him.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Mr. McCormick, Mr. Tucker is such a grand gentleman, such a fine man. I just can't stand the idea of anything happening to him.
Wait a minute. What can happen to him? All he has to do is bring a regular action in municipal court for recovery of the $1,400.
But he has. Now, that's what I'm trying to tell you. He has gone to court.
Mm-hmm. Well, then?
I finally made him tell me.
Tell you what?
What that terrible Mr. Bennett did. He said if Mr. Tucker took him to court, he'd be sorry. Mr. Tucker would be sorry. Don't you see, Mr. McCormick? Can't you do something for Mr. Tucker?
That's a great setup, isn't it? If Tucker doesn't follow through with the action, the old girl doesn't get her money. If Tucker does follow through and gets a judgment, the old man gets lumped.
Maybe he won't even get a judgment.
Why don't you say that?
I did a little asking around, Ed. Tucker's as innocent as a newborn babe around trial pleading. He was strictly corporation law, consultation, managerial advice.
Uh-huh.
And that was before you and I were born. I wonder what he lives on.
All right. This is a civil action, and I have no business poking my nose in. But take a run down to municipal court. See what you can find out.
Sure, Ed.
McCormick.
Tom Russo.
Uh-huh.
I just checked with the clerk of the court, Ed. Tucker's on the calendar for tomorrow.
Okay, we'll follow through on it.
Just a minute, Ed. The clerk says the old man is on his way up to Cash Bennett's place.
For heaven's sake, what for?
Well, between you and me, the clerk told Tucker he didn't have such a hot case and advised him to go for a settlement out of court.
How long ago was this?
About half an hour ago.
Get over there.
Well, Ed, I thought you said you didn't want to mess around in any civil
case. Tom, get over there.
All right. What's the bite?
I beg your pardon.
You come in here, start waving papers under my nose, talking settlement. What's in it for you? Will you take $250 to drop the whole thing?
Evidently, Mr. Bennett, you are incapable of putting to anybody any better motives than your own.
What are you giving me?
I cannot be bribed.
$500. $500 for yourself, $500 for the old dame. Take it or leave it.
Mr. Bennett, I came here in the hope that we could avoid needless litigation and arrive at a just and equitable solution of this matter.
Oh, lay it on a line. Will you lay it on a line? All right. Take a seat. Be with you in a minute.
What's your idea of a just, what did you call it, solution?
A just and equitable solution, Mr. Bennett, would be one in which Miss Lee and I would be spared the strain, time of life, of court appearances, and the expense, I'll be frank with you, the expense of such litigation. And you would be saved time away from your business.
Get to it, I got a customer.
In short, $1,200. Not a penny less, not a penny more than is rightly due my client, Miss Lee.
Get out of here.
Bennett, you do not lay hands upon me.
You want me to break it off?
Mr. Bennett, my wrist.
I'd like to cash a check.
You got any identification?
Yeah. Is this police shield good enough for you? Mr. Tucker, if you come downtown with me and this hoodlum...
Bennett, what do you weigh?
188. What's that got to do with
it? Mr. Tucker, would you tell me your weight?
I believe I weigh in the neighborhood of, 130. But I must confess, Mr. McCormick,
How old are you, Bennett?
40.
And your age, I believe, is 82, Mr. Tucker?
I shall be 83 next month. And may I ask, Mr. McCormick, how these interrogatories bear upon the matter in hand?
As a lawyer, Mr. Tucker, I'm sure you realize what effect this line of questioning would have in prosecution of an assault charge against our uncouth friend.
I never laid a finger on
you. Do you want me to put Detective Russo on the stand to testify to a rank breach of the peace in his presence?
But, Mr. McCormick,
pushing around a man twice your age, laying hands on him, that's assault. You better settle right here and now, Bennett, before the court hits you with a jail sentence.
But, Mr. McCormick, may I have your ear?
Yes, Mr. Tucker.
In private, if you please.
Take him outside, Detective Russo. Now, what is it, Counselor? I hope you understood what I was trying to do there.
The tactics penetrated, my dear young colleague. But I'm sure even Cash Bennett is worthy enough to realize that a line of questioning based upon the contretemps this afternoon would be ruled irrelevant in a civil action for recovery of my client.
Mr. Tucker, all you have to do is haul him before a magistrate for assault and ask the judge in city court for a postponement until that charge is dealt with. And the court will put one and one together. You'll walk away with your judgment when you go to pleading.
My dear boy, your reasoning is clever. But there is one flaw in it.
Sir?
I do not wish to press charges against the man.
Well, then Detective Russo will. He was there.
But I don't want to press charges. I beg you not to.
As you wish, Counselor. But I'd like to know why.
Mr. McCormick, not only am I an old man, but I'm an old lawyer. But today was the first time I've set foot in a courtroom in 40 years.
Well, that doesn't make any
difference. It makes a great deal of difference. I never practiced trial law. I could set you up a $1 million corporation and throw you into a $1 million bankruptcy. I could charge you $25,000 retainer just for telling you, do this, don't do that. But trial law, pleading. No, I couldn't do it then. And I'm afraid I'm not going to be very good at it now.
Sure, if you're asking the help of this office in Miss Lee's case, putting the assault matter aside for the moment, I can't use this office in a civil proceeding.
I am not asking that, McCormick. Help, that is. I'm thinking only of my client. Her best interests will be served by a straightforward presentation to the court of the facts as I have ascertained them, and as I shall draw them for her on the witness stand. They need no coloration by any charges of resistance from the Bennett men, any reference to such difficulties as I may have had with him.
You think you'll win your case?
Let me say that I fear I may lose my case if, with my poor powers, I depart from a simple, straightforward pleading.
You may be right.
And I feel also that by refraining from charging the Bennett man for today's affair, I may bring him around somehow to a readier acceptance of such judgment as the court may grant.
You may be right. Very well, I'll send it home. Let me know what happens in court tomorrow. I'll be busy or I'd be there. I'm very anxious to know the outcome.
I appreciate your interest.
Yes. Music, opera, they were in my parents' blood. I knew Miss Lee, Delva Lee, from records so old. They were half an inch thick with grooves on just one side.
Great lady. Mm-hmm.
Tell me this. Those things she auctioned off for the, what was it, $1,500?
They were the last. It was all she had.
And your fee, Counselor?
Satisfaction, young man. Satisfaction. I shall call you.
How'd it go, Tom?
It was kind of sad, Ed. The old man didn't even seem to know how to file an appearance.
The case.
I couldn't say. The old lady made an appealing witness, but the old man kind of lost his thread of questioning, you know. The clerk had to whisper to him to prove intent.
Well, I hate to do this, but even if Tucker wins his judgment, Bennett's going to weasel out of it.
Huh?
Oh, you know. He'll stall. He'll plead poverty. He'll con them into installments. I'd even push the old man around some more. And you know as well as I do, Tucker's pride won't let him admit a hoodlum manhandled him.
So?
I'm moving in.
Well, how can you, Ed? It's the civil side. He wouldn't let you move in on the assault thing.
Two magic words old Tucker probably forgot 50 years ago. Or never even heard, if all he did was warm a Wall Street chair.
Two magic words?
Excuse me. Mm-hmm. Edward McCormick.
McCormick, Amos Tucker.
Uh-huh. Tom, cross your fingers.
Yes. It is my pleasure to inform you that Miss Lee has won a judgment in municipal court for the sum of $1,400.
Good. Congratulations.
That's
wonderful.
Great.
Plus, in addition, $400 in interest and $45 in court costs.
Well, that's good news. Would you be good enough to drop up to my office for a moment, Counselor?
I'd be very glad to meet with you again, young man. But right now, I'm most anxious to execute the judgment.
Of course. But would you do this, Mr. Tucker? With complete respect for your long experience, would you let me know if you have any difficulties with Bennett?
Well, certainly. But with a judgment in hand, I don't see how we can...
Counselor, do me one favor.
By all means.
When you talk to Bennett, whisper two magic words to him.
Two magic words?
Supplementary proceedings.
I'm not sure what good that will do.
I didn't think you would be. Just take my word. Oh, my two words. Say supplementary proceedings and leave it at that. Bennett was represented by counsel, wasn't he?
Oh, yes.
Well, then, believe me, those words will be magic. And call me back.
$500, $600, $750, $850, $950, $1,000. Sorry about the whole thing, Mr. Tucker. Just one of those things.
Yes, of course. I'm pleased you see it that way.
I got to give you the rest of small bills. Got a pack of 100 ones. That's 1,100. There's 205, 16, and there's, let's see, 24. 80
and the 10 is 90,
And two more fives is 1,400.
That's interesting.
All right, all right. You're killing me. Yes. 20, 40, 60, 80, 100, 2, 3, 4, 10, 20, 30, 35, 40, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Unless you want to take some in bus tokens, that does it.
Thank you very much. You've been very courteous. Surprisingly. May I...
Get lost.
Good day, Mr. Bennett.
For you.
McCormick.
Young man. He paid.
I thought he would.
And now may I ask, what was the purpose of suggesting supplementary proceedings? Do you think that at my age I should have to ask an apple-cheeked...
Mr. Tucker, as you know, supplementary proceedings can be used as squeeze play under some circumstances.
Would you elucidate, please? I'm in somewhat of a hurry.
Oh, all right. Very well. It simply means that when you turn up with a subpoena for the debtor, requiring him to appear to answer questions to see if he can pay the judgment against him, and when he has to bring along all his books and records regarding his assets and dealings... Well, I ask you, Mr. Tucker, do you think a man like Cold Cash Bennett wants anybody poking around in his record?
I see. Yes, I see. Very interesting. Well, proves you can teach an old dog new tricks. But, you'll excuse me.
Mr. Tucker, what's your hurry? I'd like to see you again.
My dear boy, Miss Delva Lee is waiting for me at the Marriage License Bureau.
The story you just heard was drawn from New York City and based on stories of the criminal law, as detailed by Eliezer Lipsky, former assistant district attorney.
Indictment on Tuned 2 yesterday, a broadcast from their three-year run on CBS, one of only about nine in existence to this day. This is an hour of crime on Tuned 2 yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levanier, and now a high-fidelity broadcast of The Crime Club from the Mutual Broadcasting System, heard on March 20th, 1947. Ted Osborne, Alice Frost, and Elspeth Eric star in Dead Men Control.
Hello, I hope I haven't kept you waiting. Yes, this is the Crime Club. I'm the librarian. Dead Man Control. Yes, we have that Crime Club story for you. Come right over. Chair by the window. Comfortable? The book is on this shelf. Here it is. Dead Man Control by Helen Riley. The very absorbing story of a murder in which Cupid held the hand of death. Let's look at it under the reading lamp. It was late morning. And in the library of a mansion on East 67th Street, multimillionaire Fenimore Kingston was standing before the wall safe he had just opened. He smiled. And then, as he reached in... 2 hours later, Inspector Christopher McKee was in his office at police headquarters on Center Street when the telephone rang.
Inspector McKee talking, Homicide Bureau.
Good morning. Kingston.
Yes?
Mrs. Fenimore Kingston.
Oh, yes?
My husband's been murdered. Can you come?
Where?
Our home is on East 67th Street.
All right, I'll be there in 20 minutes.
Yes, sir.
Cassidy, order my car. We're going uptown.
Yes, sir. And how are you...
And don't stop to ask about anybody's health. I'm in a hurry. Go on, Mrs. Kingston.
Well, Inspector, as soon as I saw that open wall safe,
thought my husband had been killed by a burglar.
Mm-hmm.
So while I was waiting for you, I checked the contents. The money and the bonds were still there. But...
Yes?
The diamond ring that Fenimore gave me after our wedding 3 months ago. It's gone.
That wouldn't be the well-publicized Kingston diamond, would it?
It would, Inspector. And it's worth $500,000.
Yes, but the cash from those negotiable bonds...
I can't understand why they weren't taken too.
Very unusual thief, to say the least. Where were you when the miracle happened?
Out. I went out early this morning. I was restless.
Why?
I was tired of doing nothing. So I took the car and drove until I was tired of driving.
Alone?
Inspector McKee.
Don't be alarmed, Mrs. Kingston. I'm not insinuating...
But your tone...
Merely professional. Now, according to the medical examiner, your husband was shot in the back and death was instantaneous about 2 hours ago. Who was in the house with him then?
I don't know.
What about the servants? Did they go out driving too?
We have no servants.
In this big house?
They quit last night.
Oh?
Don't let it surprise you, Inspector. Fenimore was not an easy person to get along with.
Mrs. Kingston, for your special information, I don't let anything surprise me.
Excuse me, sir.
What is it, Cassidy?
It's about the murder weapon.
Did you find it?
No, sir. There ain't a trace of it in the house. Me and the boys have looked in every nook and...
All right, Cassidy. All right.
Yes, sir. Oh, my.
What's the matter?
Over there, Inspector. Peep it out from under that corner of the window drape. It shines like a diamond.
It is a diamond.
Well, if it is, then the saints preserve us. It must be as big as an eyeball.
Yes. Well, Mrs. Kingston.
My ring.
No burglary, huh?
Doesn't seem so, does it? But how did that ring get under the drape?
The law of gravity. It fell when your husband fell, after he was shot. And it either rolled or bounced. You can take your pick.
I'll take the ring, if you don't mind.
Later. Right now, it's evident.
But it's mine.
We'll take good care of it. Come on, Cassidy.
Are we finished here, sir?
For the time being, goodbye, Mrs. Kingston.
Goodbye, Inspector.
Cassidy.
Inspector McKee, if it's one question I might ask...
Go ahead.
What's the ring got to do with the cadaver we carried upstairs?
I think it killed him.
The deputy, say.
Don't lead me on, Sergeant. I've no time to explain.
If you say so, Inspector.
Going back to my office, I want you to go to the telephone company. Get a list of every call that's been made from or to this house in the last 2 days. Report to me at headquarters.
Yes, sir. But there's one thing that...
Now what?
But it's that girl in there, Mrs. Kingston. Now, I've been on the force for 32 years, and it's a fine education I've got about the good and the bad in people.
Not now, Cassidy.
When a girl, young and beautiful, marries a man twice her age and a millionaire, she didn't marry him for love.
Is this Michael Dolger's apartment?
Yes.
Who is this?
Amy Cloverson. Why?
This is Catherine Kingston. Let me talk to Michael, please.
You might ask me how I'm feeling.
Please, Amy.
After all, you did get what I wanted.
I want to speak to Michael.
I'll ask him how he feels about it. Hold the wire. Don't wind it too tightly around your neck, dear.
Hello, Kathy.
What's she doing there?
Oh, she just dropped in for a cocktail.
Oh, it doesn't matter. I want you to meet me right away.
Where?
Central Park, inside the 72nd Street entrance. I'll pick you up in my car.
All right. What's the rumpus about?
Fenimore's dead.
What did you say?
He was murdered this morning.
Good grief. Maybe I'd better come over.
No. The police are here, dozens of them, all over the place. Meet me in half an hour. And come alone.
How'd you manage it?
I didn't.
What?
I couldn't get out without being seen. Michael, I'm in trouble.
But if the police followed you...
Is that all you care about? Your precious hide?
Well, it's the only one I've got.
Well, you don't have to worry. I wasn't followed.
Are you sure?
Yes, look for yourself. Is there a police car behind us?
No, but...
Michael, really, I'm in serious trouble.
How was Fenimore killed?
He was shot. And the police think I did it.
You? Have they said so?
Well, not in words, they haven't. That Inspector McKee, he thinks he's very clever.
Well, you should have left me alone, Kathy.
I couldn't. I had to speak to you.
Now, why didn't you do it on the phone?
I didn't want to incriminate you.
What?
Suppose one of those policemen had been listening at the door.
Well, suppose.
He'd have heard me asking you about that appointment you had with Fenimore this morning.
That I had?
Just about the time he was killed.
Now, wait a minute. I had no appointment with Fenimore.
That's not the truth. He phoned you and asked you to come over.
Did he tell you that?
No.
Then how do you know so much?
I was listening in on the upstairs extension.
Oh. How much did you hear?
He wanted you to meet him at the house at 11 o'clock. It was very important.
Anything else?
No, I put the receiver down. It was 10:30, and I wanted to be out of the house before you arrived.
Really?
I didn't know what he was going to talk to you about. I was afraid it might be us.
So you ran away. That's too bad.
Why?
Because if you'd stayed, you'd have learned something.
Didn't he talk to you about us?
No, dear.
Well, then what did he?
I don't know. I wasn't there.
What?
That's right. Fenimore wanted to see me, but I didn't want to see him, and I told him so.
You told Fenimore?
Yes, I did. The great mammoth. Well, was it about time?
I'd like to believe that, Mike.
Then do. I got tired of being my cousin's errand boy and of running to him every time he beckoned.
But you're alone.
I told him what to do with that tool. But it doesn't make any difference now, does it?
No.
You're free. And we'll have all the money we both need.
That's putting it very bluntly.
Why not? He never cared for anyone, including you. You were the most beautiful thing he ever saw, and he wanted you. It's just as simple as that.
I know all about it.
All right. All right. I'll shut up. Kathy?
Yes?
Did you really go out this morning?
I said I did.
Of course. But I was just thinking, what a wonderful opportunity you had. Alone in that house with him.
Yeah? Uh-huh. Good work, Gordon. Let me know when she gets back.
Can I come in, Inspector?
Help yourself, Cassidy.
Well, I checked with the telephone company, sir. And it's big news, if I don't mind saying it myself.
Yes? Anything like Catherine Kingston going out to meet a man?
A what?
You've heard of the species, Cassidy. And I'm sure you've heard of Central Park.
Is that where she went with him?
Mm-hmm.
In broad daylight?
There's no topping an Irishman, is there?
Well, not if he comes from the County Cork, sir. Who's the man?
We don't know yet, but he's being tailed. Now, what did you find out at the telephone company?
Oh, here's a list of all the cars that came and went from the Kingston house in the last couple of days.
Right.
It's them last three that was made this morning.
Yes, all outgoing. One at 10:30, one at 10:35.
And Kingston was killed at about 11.
And this one at 1:45. Oh, a few minutes after we left Mrs. Kingston.
That's right.
Who were these calls made to?
But I got that on another slip of paper. Now, where the... here it is. Now, the first one and the last one to Michael Dolge.
So that's the man.
Mm-hmm.
Now, go ahead, Cassidy. I'm just checking.
He was the dead man's cousin.
How do you know?
Well, I remember seeing his name in the papers after the Kingston wedding. Seems to me he was either the best man or one of the ushers. But it's not him I'd be worrying about, sir.
No? Why not?
It's that woman. The one who got the call at 10:35.
What woman?
Amy Claubertson.
No answer. Michael Dolge, most likely out with Catherine Kingston. What'd you say about a woman?
Amy Claubertson.
Well, what about her?
Well, see, you know how I read the newspapers every day.
I know.
After I get through with the spotting pages, I always turn to the society page.
Mm.
It's an old habit of mine. I acquired it 32 years ago when I was a rookie on that Fifth Avenue beat. You know Fifth Avenue uptown where Central Park lies opposite them glorious mansions with the beautiful...
Sit down, Cassidy.
Well, thank you. Them were fine old days. Yeah, people used to come from all over just to look at the Woolworth building.
Don't let me interrupt you, but you were telling me about a woman.
A woman?
Yes, in connection with a murder.
Amy Clarbertson. Well, just seeing her name again brought to mind a society page item of about 5 months ago.
To the effect
that Amy Clarbertson and Fenimore Kingston were engaged to be married.
Cassidy, are you sure?
Yes, I am, sir, because the diamond ring was mentioned in the same article.
How?
Well, she wore it at the formal reception.
I see.
And not 2 months later, Fenimore Kingston married Catherine. It's the old story, Inspector.
Not another one, please.
The woman scorned. There's no fury like a woman who expects to marry a millionaire and gets jilted.
Yes. Yes. There's no doubt about it. All right, I'll pick it up on the way out. Well.
Oh, bad news, Inspector.
For someone, that was a lab just phoned. The ring we found is a phony. A perfect imitation.
You mean it's made of glass?
Not quite. Somebody had a good job done for a few hundred dollars, and the original, valued at $500,000...
Well, it might be somewhere in a vault, maybe. But lots of people wear paste and keep their valuables locked up.
Cassidy.
Yes, sir.
Phone the Kingston house. Tell the men to turn that place inside out.
Yes, sir.
And when you get through, take as many men as you need and contact every diamond cutter in town, especially the ones around Maiden Lane.
Yes, sir.
Now, where's that slip of paper with the names on it?
It's right here, sir. The address is, too.
Give it to me. I'm going out to pay Amy Culbertson a visit. Excuse me.
I don't want any.
Inspector McKee, police.
I still don't want any, but you can come in. I have scotch on the table. Cigarettes, you didn't bring your own.
No, thanks.
Sit yourself. What do you want?
Sit down, please.
You're here to ask a lot of questions about Fenimore Kingston's murder. Don't waste your breath because I don't know any of the answers.
How do you know about his murder?
Radio told me.
Not today. Not today, Miss Lawerson. Why don't you sit down?
Maybe I don't want to.
Would you have any reason to protect Catherine Kingston?
Not one. Well, here's to you.
Michael Doe? Sorry, I didn't mean to catch you off guard.
Why'd you mention his name to me?
This pack of matches with his name on the cover.
You're pretty smart, aren't you?
I have a weakness for matches that are left on tables.
All right, so he told me about Fenimore's death. I was at his apartment when Catherine phoned. She told him. Anything else you'd like to know?
What time did you meet Fenimore Kingston this morning?
I did what?
He phoned you at 10:35.
How'd you find out about that?
You just told me.
What? Why, you wheedling weasel.
Shall we talk now?
Ditch curds and have me swing at him.
I'd like to know about you and Fenimore Kingston.
I'm through talking to you.
Are you? Then suppose we go down to headquarters.
What for?
We're very lonesome.
Now, wait a minute. Let me go. I haven't done anything.
What about you and Kingston?
We were engaged. And then he jilted me and married that...
Yes?
Catherine and I were in the same show. I met Fenimore at a party and he fell for me like a ton of diamonds. And then, like a fool, I introduced him to Catherine.
Why did he phone you this morning?
One today.
Now, look, Miss Clarkson.
That's the truth. Told me he was going to divorce Catherine. He found out about her and Michael. Thought I knew something, too.
And, of course, you rushed over to Michael's apartment and told him.
Not exactly. I tried to make it casual.
3 hours later?
Mike and I were in the same boat. Both of us had been kicked around by Fenimore. That was a common bond.
So you waited from 10:35 until almost 2. Oh,
still pitching curves, aren't you?
Was it because you tried to get his apartment in the morning and couldn't?
No.
Or didn't you even try?
What do you want from me? I didn't kill anybody.
Fenimore didn't call you to talk about his wife.
Then I don't know what he did call me
for. He asked you about this ring.
What? Where'd you...
You wore it for a while, didn't you?
Yeah, but I gave it back.
This one?
Look, mister, there's only one of its kind in the world.
Why did he call you about it?
Because he thought...
Yes?
Nothing.
He thought you'd know a good imitation from the real thing.
You mean that diamond's a fake?
We'll find out soon enough, if you're really surprised. Goodbye, for now.
Oh, are you going?
Sorry?
Oh, I'm collapsing. Drop in again sometime. Anytime.
Thanks. And let's hope I don't have to return that invitation. Hmm? Amy, what are you doing here?
I figured she'd drive you home. She was always the lady. Get back in the car.
Now, see here,
Amy. Get back or I'll make a scene that'll turn you both into mummies.
Gotta do as she says, Michael.
All right, Cassie.
I'll be right behind you, kiddies, in the back seat. Now, Catherine, who told Inspector McKee about me?
What?
About Fenimore having phoned me this morning.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, you know he phoned me, don't you?
No.
Oh, you couldn't tell the truth if you had a mouthful of it and it was choking.
Wait a minute, Amy.
She's trying to frame me. And she'll frame you, too.
What was Fenimore talking to you about?
Ask her. She was tuned into the extension.
Were you, Kathy?
No.
She had to be. How else...
She said no, Amy.
All right, so she said no. How did Inspector McKee know that I talked to Fenimore and about the diamond, too?
The diamond?
Yes. If you didn't know that beautiful thing was just a hunk of glass.
What? That's a lie.
Well, it wasn't when Fenimore asked me about it this morning. He wanted me to return the original.
Oh, is that why you killed him?
Oh, I knew that was coming out of you. You'd like the police to think that, wouldn't you?
Maybe they already do.
Well, that wouldn't put you in the clear, Kathy, darling. I returned the original to Fenimore.
Can you prove it?
Can you prove that I didn't? Wind her up, Michael. She seems to have run down.
I think you've said enough, Amy.
I'm through. And so is she. For good, I hope.
Inspector McKee, homicide.
Cassidy talking, sir.
Go ahead.
I think I found him, Inspector.
Who?
The diamond cutting fella.
Good. What does he say about the Kingston Diamond?
Well, sir, it might be the man and it might not.
What?
Well, I found him in a small room on the top floor of a small building just around the corner off Maiden Lane. There was no name on the door, just the words diamond cutting. But I took a chance anyway.
That's
a good thing I did, Inspector.
No.
For there was that poor old fellow stretched out on the floor, dead.
Oh, no.
A little fellow he was, too. And beaten around the head unmercifully.
What's the address?
I got it written down on a piece of paper. Now, where the... here it is.
It's up here, Inspector.
All right, Cassidy, I'm doing the best I can.
But I got some information, sir. I checked with some of the neighbors on this
floor. Where's the body?
I'll take you to it, sir. Well, as I was saying, I checked. And the fellow's name was Rudolf Leibnitz.
What else?
Well, that's all, sir. He came over from the other side a few years ago. A victim of war and oppression. And to think that his only reward for minding his own
business... How do you know he was minding his own business?
His reputation in the trade, the Inspector, was good. He was known to all his neighbors as an honest man, a good worker, and a fine, upstanding character. And when your competitors have only
is
praise
this the room,
for you,
Cassidy?
Yes, sir. There he is.
Yeah.
A little old fella.
Why didn't you tell me his files had been opened and dumped?
Well, I was going to,
well,
Chief.
Well, it doesn't matter. Somebody wanted a record and they took it.
You think this can be an outcome of the Kingston murder?
Maybe. Let's have a look at the body.
He didn't have a chance. Struck on the back of the head and then beaten until he
Cassidy.
Was... Yes?
This man's been dead since this morning. Late this morning.
Would you be sure about that?
Rigor mortis takes at least 6 hours to set in. Just beginning.
Ah, then it'd be about the time Fenimore Kingston was murdered.
A little later, but not much. The killer came right from the Kingston house to this place and... All right, Cassidy, there's no point in searching the room.
No, sir?
We won't find anything.
Oh.
Hello. Hello, operator. Give me police headquarters.
Have you got a plan, sir?
I hope so, Cassidy. Hello. Give me Murphy and Homicide. Inspector McKee. I hope so, Cassidy. If it works, it'll be a miracle.
It will talk of the miracles. There was a...
I want you to have the following three parties picked up. All right? Catherine Kingston, Michael Doles, and A.B. Clauberson. You'll find the addresses on my desk. And keep them in my office until I get there. Now it's for you, Cassidy.
Yes, sir.
You stay here. Phone the medical examiner's office and look after the usual details. I'm going out for a long walk.
Yes, sir.
Those people will wait, even if they don't like it. And let's hope they don't like it enough to burn.
Inspector McKee.
Well, company. How are you, Mrs. Kingston?
Why did you have me brought here? And
Miss Robertson?
I'm cheerful enough to break your neck.
And taking two from three, you must be Michael Doe.
We've been waiting for 2 hours, Inspector.
Yes. Why have you had me arrested?
It's a habit of mine, Mrs. Kingston, when a murder's been committed.
Well, then we are under arrest.
For the time being, Miss Robertson. Now, if you'll excuse me for a moment, I've been working on another case, and there's some papers on my desk.
You've no right to keep us here.
Please, Kathy.
Well, he hasn't, Michael. Not without charges.
Then wait and try to be calm.
Very interesting.
There's nothing incriminating in what I said, Inspector.
Oh, no. I wasn't referring to that. This memo. Good news.
Well, I'm not going to wait here and let you waste my time.
Mrs. Kingston, this building is full of policemen.
For pity's sake, Kathy, stop being so nervous.
If he has anything to say to us, he
can... I have. One of you killed Fenimore Kingston this morning.
I wasn't home.
You were out driving. But who saw you, Mrs. Kingston?
What?
It takes at least two to make an alibi.
But surely you don't think that I...
Well?
You're out of your mind, Inspector. She married him only 3 months ago.
And then she changed her mind. She thought how nice it would be to marry you.
Inspector.
It's all right, Kathy. He's just fishing.
But that wasn't the reason Kingston was killed.
What?
Look out for him when he pitches curves.
You know the reason, Miss Clauberson.
Oh, now I'm it, huh?
Kingston found out that his famous diamond had become an imitation.
My ring?
This morning he took it out of the wall safe. The thief, the person who had made the substitution, was in the room with him. And Kingston was shot in the back and killed.
Don't look at me, Inspector. I wasn't there.
How about you, Mrs. Kingston?
I told you.
Yes. And you, Mr. Doles?
I didn't know anything about Fenimore's death until Catherine phoned me.
Then you admit that she phoned me?
Of course, it's no secret. I was Fenimore's cousin.
And you were making sure that Catherine stayed in the family.
Now look here, Inspector.
Excuse me, please. Yes? All right. In a few minutes, I'll call you. Now, this memo becomes very important.
May we go now?
Don't rush me, Mrs. King.
But if you're going to work on another case...
I'm not. An imitation of the Kingston diamond was made. And by a strange coincidence, shortly after Fenimore Kingston was murdered, the workroom of a diamond cutter was robbed.
What's that got to do with us?
Miss Clauberson, tell me what you know about Rudolf Leibniz.
What I know? Look, I may get around,
would
but
would you
that...
like to see him?
All right, it'll make you happy.
I'll ask him to come in.
What?
He's in a room down the hall, Mr. Doles. I had him brought here from the hospital.
From the... The hospital.
He wasn't dead.
You're lying.
Murphy, bring Leibniz in here.
No. No. No.
Never mind. Send in a stenographer. We're going to take a confession. Hello.
Inspector McKee, I'm sorry to be bothering you at your home, but when I return to headquarters this evening...
What is it, Cassidy?
Well, it's about that fellow Michael Doles.
He killed his cousin, Fenimore Kingston.
Well, that's what the boys told me, but I'm...
He took the diamond and had the imitation put in.
You don't say.
Mm-hmm, about 3 weeks ago.
How did he get hold of it?
That was very simple. Catherine wore the ring at a house party. Doles mentioned to Fenimore that the diamond needed cleaning and that he could take care of it for him.
Oh, so he took the stone down to Leibniz and had an imitation made.
That's right. It was so good that Fenimore didn't notice it right away. But this morning...
Ah, yes, this born in...
It's all in the confession, Cassidy.
Ah. Oh. Then Kingston knew right away who had stolen the real diamond, didn't he now?
Yes, he did know.
Oh, Inspector, get along with you. Then why did he bother to phone that Amy Claverson girl?
We'll never know, Cassidy. Maybe he was anxious to turn the clock back to better times.
And so closes tonight's Crime Club book, Dead Man Control, based on a story by Helen Riley. Stedman Coles did the radio adaptation. Roger Bauer produced and directed. Ted Osborne played Inspector McKee. Alice Frost was Catherine Kingston. Elspeth Eric was Amy. Sherling Oliver was Michael Dolge. And Barry Thompson played Cassidy. Oh, I beg your pardon. Hello, I hope I haven't kept you waiting. Yes, this is the Crime Club. I'm the librarian. Yes, come over a week from tonight. We have a very unusual story of a will that had the power to kill. It's called Silent Witnesses by John Stephen Strange. In the meantime... Well, in the meantime, there is a new Crime Club book available this week and every week at bookstores everywhere. Yes, it's available now. Fine. And we'll look for you next week.
Crime Club, on Tuned To Yesterday, a Mutual Broadcasting System episode from March 20th, 1947, closing the cases on this hour of crime on Tuned To Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levenier. It's been a pleasure.